And so there's some basic questions here. Does healthy start work? Does case management make a difference? And ultimately, what does all this mean? When we look at 2010 data for infant mortality for the United States by total and by black-white race, and we compare where a healthy start is relative to those rates, I think in 2010 there were 105 healthy start projects nationwide. And when we total the infant mortality rate for those projects, about 60% or so, I think, in primarily African-American communities, but also in barrios and reservations throughout the country. Remember that by definition, I think most of you know, to be part of a Healthy Start project, you had to be in a high-risk population group for compromised birth outcomes in the first place. And so during 2010, the overall Healthy Start infant mortality rate was 4.87, better than the nation's overall and white infant mortality rate, and of course significantly better than the black infant mortality rate. So I think that this goes a long way toward answering that question about whether or not Healthy Start works. In January of 2013, SACM, when it was talking about and defining infant mortality, suggested that it was multifactorial and that its rates reflected society's commitment to the provision of five things: high quality health care, adequate food and good nutrition, safe and stable housing, a healthy psychological and physical environment, sufficient income to prevent impoverishment. So the first thing I want to point out in these five things is that four of the five things that SACM suggested were important, or what we would refer to as social determinants of health, non-clinical things that influence outcomes. For some purposes later in our conversation, I also want to pull in this second paragraph that is such: our ability to prevent infant death and to address long-standing disparities in infant mortality rates between population groups is a barometer or a measure of our society's commitment to the health and well-being of all women, children, and families. When we look at overall infant mortality rate for the United States, this slide goes from 1980 to 2011. You can see that we've made significant improvement during that period of time. When we disaggregate this by black-white race, we see, of course, this substantial gap, and that the gap has persisted for a long period of time. So you think about that SACM paragraph, that our ability to prevent infant deaths and to address long-standing disparities is a measure of our society's commitment. And you wonder what this then says about us in terms of this very dramatic difference in birth outcomes. And although I don't point it out in this slide, Sid, if we looked at the disparity ratio between blacks and whites during this period of time, the disparity ratios actually get worse because the white infant mortality rate improves at a faster pace than the black infant mortality rate, so the disparity ratio increases. Here's the point, though, that I want to make, and I think try to drive home the issues that are a concern here about this data. This infant mortality rate in 2011 of 11.42 for black infants in the United States is the historical best that we've ever had in the United States of America. So even when subsequently 2012 data has come out, that black infant mortality rate went up a little bit. This is our historical best. Our historical best for black babies in 2011 is still significantly higher than our white infant mortality rate was back in 1980. Our historical best for black babies in 2011 is still significantly higher than our white infant mortality rate was back in 1980. And if you just look at that period of time, you have to go back into the 70s to find a white infant mortality rate that's comparable to the black infant mortality rate in 2011. So that if you take that lag time of about 35 years and you tack it on to 2011, looking at the period of time that it's going to take black babies to catch up with white babies in terms of the opportunity of surviving the first year of life, unless we're willing to have the courage to change this trend, unless we're willing to seriously talk about increasing the rate of survival for black babies during the first year of life, then what we're saying is that we're willing for black babies to have to wait until the year 2046 to have the same opportunity to survive in the first year of life as white babies enjoy today. We think that's wrong. We think it's unfair. We think that in terms of our sense of social justice, we can do better. And so Healthy Start has been a wonderful program to be a part of because it's proven to us, in fact, that we can do better, that we can accomplish better. So one of the hallmarks, of course, of Healthy Start is this whole notion of case management and how we conduct case management. Because case management assists us in addressing the non-clinical issues that have clinical sequelae, it's very important. But as you all know, the majority of the time our conversation about infant mortality isn't around social issues. The leading causes of why babies die during the first year of life are always described in clinical terms. So it's prematurity, congenital anomalies, maternal complications of pregnancy, sudden unexpected infant death, etc. We talk about it in almost exclusively in terms of the medical model, so that the social issues get very little play in our intervention strategies and the programs that we develop. And I think that that's significant. And one of the ways that Healthy Start has been different from a lot of other programs. Now, I'm not suggesting that the clinical issues aren't important. I think they're very important. But I also think the social issues are at least as important. And my own personal belief is that we make our best decisions in the area of overlap between the clinical and the social. And I think that that's part of the reason that the National Healthy Start Association has been able to produce the statistics that it's been able to produce in terms of infant mortality. I also believe that that contributes significantly to why nurse-family partnership, centering pregnancy, and some other case management-oriented programs have been able to make the difference that they've been able to make. And so when we look at trying to address disparities in birth outcomes, that, in my opinion, is probably the way the model ought to look, where the majority of our emphasis is placed in the social or non-clinical realm, not demeaning the significance of the clinical interventions that we make. But until we get to the point that we're willing on a community level to address the social determinants of health, then we're going to keep chasing our tails. And we're going to keep trying to fix on a clinical basis stuff that had its origin on a social basis. And so that's the significance of this slide from my perspective. That when we begin to take a social determinants of health perspective, it forces us to pay much more attention to all the issues below the waterline here. And as long as we continue to focus primarily on the medical problems, then we never figure out what wrecked the boat in the first place. It's as if we're in this little boat and we don't see this huge iceberg in front of us. When we look at the various domains that influence population health and that account for health inequities, there are several. Here's the key portion of this from my perspective, that all of these things, every one of them, if you will, is nested in community, meaning that we control them, that at the community level, we influence all of this stuff. Now, behind each of those domains, I put a C or an S for what I think are clinical or social or non-clinical contributors. And you can see that the majority of the contributors are S instead of C. But again, this emphasis that we have to somehow have the courage, develop the know-how to more effectively address social determinants. What our caseworkers do is to try to escort our patients around, under, through, over, obstacles that are prevalent in communities that place families at increased risk for compromised outcome. Where the non-clinical stuff is concerned, we rely on them to do this kind of heavy lifting. Dr. Kothari just briefly mentioned a couple of times during her presentation that the Kalamazoo model, in terms of case management, at least in the Healthy Start programs, worked real hard to place our caseworkers within the clinical settings. A lot of times case managers are part of another organization, sometimes never making it into the clinical setting, never having opportunity to sit down one-on-one with doctors and nurses who are caring for our patients. That our case managers were an integral part of our team was extremely important to us, so that in the care that I provided to Miss Whoever, I was just a member of the team, no more important than anybody else. And I can't tell you how many times I learned a tremendous amount from my case managers who would tell me about things that Miss So-and-so was going through that never came out in our clinical encounter that, of course, had a huge impact on the provision of her care. So this model of case management that we developed in Kalamazoo, I refer to as community-oriented obstetrical care. It's based after Jack Geiger's model of community-oriented primary care. And to try to help figuratively explain it, I kind of put together this video. It's just going to play in the small middle portion. I hope I can get it to play. I've been working with this all morning. So the first part of this is just a Verizon commercial. I have to give them their due, but I don't have any stock in Verizon, nothing like that. But we're going to play this again with the audio changed a bit. I'm sorry it's not bigger, but I couldn't figure out how to do that in time for the presentation.
So I had a doctor's appointment today, and found out I was pregnant. At first I was scared, but then my doctor told me about community-oriented obstetrical care. It's this network. I was happy to learn I am not alone. There are doctors, nurses, dietitians, social workers, and members of the community to help me through this joyous time. I have the network.
So figuratively, what we were trying to describe to the community was this whole notion of the community surrounding a pregnant woman and supporting her, helping to escort her successfully through pregnancy, labor, and delivery. And we called that community-oriented obstetrical care, but it's a way of providing managed care in a comprehensive fashion. And I would suggest to you that this guy who we all know of as Can You Hear Me Now? Would be the case manager in this sort of setting. So there's several basic ideas that I think are important for us to appreciate and understand about this. First off, that socioeconomic position, race and ethnicity and gender all structure the likelihood of multiple exposures at multiple points in time over the entire life course from conception to old age, and it's this lifelong cascade of interacting multiple exposures balanced against available resources that are the important determinants of how social inequalities leave their imprint as health disparities. Even in the most affluent countries, people who are less well-off have substantially shorter life expectancies and more illness than the rich, and where infant mortality is concerned, their rates are higher. Scientific study has told us that there's a growing understanding of the remarkable sensitivity of health to the social environment and to what had become known as the social determinants of health. The WHO indicates that the social conditions in which we are born, grow up, live, work, and age are the single most important determinants of one's health status. These circumstances are in turn shaped by a wider set of forces, economic, social policies, and politics. An individual choice is important, but factors in the social determinant of what determine access to health services and influence lifestyle choices in the first place. Our traditional study of infant mortality attempts to address the medical conditions associated with poor birth outcome, prematurity, low birth weight, etc. Even where maternal mortality is concerned, our description of it is entirely clinical. Studies of health disparities suggest that it is our different living circumstances that influence our risk of experiencing these adverse perinatal outcomes. In other words, our living conditions have health consequences. Often those of us practicing medicine concentrate on clinical interventions alone, thereby trying to medicalize a problem that is socially complex. To improve the medical consequences of the social determinants of health, we have to move upstream to improve the living circumstances of individuals residing further down the social ladder and simultaneously provide all individuals with comparable health care. So regarding our profound differences in birth outcome by race, social determinants of health are, in my opinion, the primary reasons for those differences. Therefore, we need managed care. We need an army that allows us to address those circumstances. In my opinion, poverty and race are intertwined, with each making the other worse. And I want to make this connection here, because we often talk about race as if it's a real thing that has some biological construct, and I want you to hear from me that at least where black-white differences are concerned, most of the time, in my opinion, when we're talking about race, what we're actually talking about is racism. We are talking about the influence of the living situation in this country on that group of people that we are referring to. And so I suggest that racism represents a particularly damaging and pervasive exposure, and for the poor, it's the venom and the bite of poverty and each of the other social determinants. It's intricately woven into every domain of American life and has cumulative detrimental effects throughout an individual's lifetime, across all domains, and across generations. So at some point, because in my opinion, case management is a midstream intervention. But often, our policy and our intervention strategies stop at case management. We are satisfied that we have someone who can take a patient by the hand and escort them around, over, or under an obstacle. And at some point, communities have to face up to what those obstacles are and eliminate them. We have to figure out how to get rid of them, and that's what the whole social determinants of health perspective, I think, is trying to teach us. Thank you all for it.